He says statements like Odinga's force LGBTI people to censor themselves.
If you try to share with some people, then you will not openly tell them who you are, but if you try to twist them and hear their views, you can just hear that they are not ready to welcome.
After opening his Anglican service to members of the LGBTI community, Reverend Michael Kimindu was pressured by Kenya's Archbishop to step down. In the meantime, he started other sheep ministries and the Kenyan branch of the Metropolitan Community Church, which he runs out of his home after being evicted from rental spaces for his work with LGBTI people.
It has been difficult for me since starting this ministry, but I think everything has teething problems. I would consider those as teething problems. I'm beginning to see now people recognizing that what I'm doing is good. Even among my Anglican colleagues, there are those who tell me they support this ministry in their hearts, only that they fear being sent out of their positions. And I understand, because most of them are young, they have young families, they are very far from retirement.
Kimindu is still waiting for a decision on his 2-year-old appeal to remain with the Anglican Church. Tanya Castle, Free Speech Radio News, Nairobi, Kenya.
Tune in to FSRN tomorrow for the final part in our series on gay rights, discrimination and religion when we speak with Ugandan activist Kasia Jacqueline Nabagasera. She's the founder of the LGBT rights organisation Freedom and Roam Uganda and just won the Martin Ennals Award for Human Rights Defenders. That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Matt Laszlo. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley is Rose Katapchi and Jane Chang. FSRN welcomes your questions, comments and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. Thanks for listening. In San Francisco, I'm Danny Wood.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is just about 7 o'clock. Stay tuned for a special expanded edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good evening to everybody. I'm sorry, I just drank a Club Mate and I'm kind of jittery. How you doing? It's Wednesday again. We have a special 2-hour program tonight, which is a lot of fun. And we have all kinds of people here tonight. This is Emmanuel, joined by Mike.
Can make it through the first 2 minutes?
I don't know. It's been rough. It really has been. Dotret.
Hey.
Voltaire.
Hi.
Jim.
Hello.
Bernie S. down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Over on the other side of the studio, way over there, is the familiar face of Greg Newby.
Hey, what's up? It's great to be here all the way from Alaska.
All the way from Alaska. Wow, how about that? And is that the voice of Mitch Altman I hear at the other side of the country?
Yo, it is.
Wow, this is really special. We have a lot of really cool people here tonight. Well, first of all, Greg, since you're right here in New York from Alaska, is this the first time since The Next Hope that you've been here?
You know, I've actually been in town probably two or three times a year, usually just for a day or two visiting parents and stuff. But I almost never stay more than a night or two, and I almost never actually make it into New York proper. So it's kind of a thrill to spend a couple days in the city.
Well, it's your lucky day because you're here for a show and a fundraiser show and an expanded fundraiser show. So, wow.
Yeah, we actually are big fans of Democracy Now! Back in Fairbanks. We catch it every morning. We're on a very special 29-hour tape delay. Mm-hmm. And
Wait. 29-hour tape delay?
Wait,
why
don't
you just
different time zone?
4 hours later? 5 hours later, rather. I mean, that's a day and 5 hours.
You did that math really well, actually.
Thank you.
And I've asked myself the same question. I guess there was way back when there was a problem with the podcast. We download it and then play it back from automation system. And I guess there's a problem with the podcast not always being ready in time. And so they took the conservative approach because it's almost always ready within about 24 or 26 hours.
It seems like you should be able to get it live somehow in this day and age.
Live would be 4 a.m. So could get it live.
You tape it, then you play it back or something like that.
I've raised this with the group. It's a student-run radio station, and they have incredible turnover. And I think that they have not had quite the technical skills with things like computers or taping or machines. They're really good at posters and T-shirts, and also they're doing now a logo.
You broadcast over the air in Fairbanks.
That's KSUA, exactly, 91.5 FM.
Awesome. Well, it's good. I didn't know that you actually did a radio show every week, is it?
Yeah, it's really just an indie rock show, so it's a typical college station with a variety during the day. We call it the day shift, where you do the playlist from your regular college music journal stuff. And then during nighttime, we have the everything variety, a lot of hip-hop, and there's a fantastic trio really of punk shows and metal shows.
Now, those of you who have been to any of the more recent Hope conferences recognize Greg Newby as one of the MCs, a person who introduces people, various types of people at the conference to a mostly receptive audience. So you did that for The Next Hope?
Quite a lot, yeah. I guess I've done it now for about four conferences. And the funny thing is, of course, I never introduce myself, so people might not actually know who I am, but I'm the guy
that... But you always dress up really nicely.
Yeah, I'm the guy that has a zoot suit, and I've worn a graduation, like a college gown type of thing. And
I hear an evening gown was on the agenda for next time.
We'll see. It's a possibility. I mean, because the problem is New York in July, you don't really want to be heavily dressed. Mm-hmm. And the zoot suit actually does get kind of warm.
Yeah, but we do have air conditioning inside, so as long as you don't venture outside, you're fine.
During those keynotes, it gets really hot up on the stage.
That's
true. You got the bright lights. Mm-hmm. You got the room is full of perspiring hacker types and their families and offspring and whatnot, and it does get sticky.
Interesting. Mike?
We should make up fantastic stories for listeners about what you're wearing today. They'll never know the difference.
Well, I think our listeners are astute. They can tell when we're lying.
Well, I do have a 2600 shirt on, actually.
Oh, look at that.
So,
wow.
You've
got the 2600 waste management shirt.
I do, yeah, because I've been in a professional training situation all week, and so I had to wear my professional training shirt and look all
and that,
corporate.
And you can go to board meetings with that. That's got a collar on it, so that 2600 shirt works.
Doesn't work with a tie, but it does fine as far as corporate wear. Yeah.
You see, this is very convincing. I almost believe you.
I totally believe you. Well, Mitch, we have you here, or there, actually. You're in the Bay Area, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm home.
Mitch actually you've been up to a lot of interesting things. We're going to first talk about the things you've been doing lately. You just got back from, what's the name of that country? I keep forgetting the name of it.
That place with a government that's even worse than ours?
Well, let's see. Okay, that narrows it down a bit, but not enough.
Yeah, so I was in China
for the
last month, and a lot of really amazing things are happening over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us the things that you're responsible for that are amazing that are happening over there.
China, a lot of things are opening up lately that even are very different from a year and a half ago when I was there last. So there's a lot of opening up of things culturally, and it was good timing for me to go there, meeting people involved with the hackerspace movement, because they really didn't know of each other, and me meeting them, I could hook them all together. And there are now 4 hackerspaces in China, which is totally new as of this year, and mostly this past month. And as a result of hooking people together, a bunch of events happened, including teaching hundreds of people to solder in Beijing at the China Science Museum of Museum of Science and Technology. And there's also a talk I gave on how to start a hackerspace that got standing room only at the Panasonic Center, which gave people a lot of target practice as well for TV Begone. And as a result of that, a new hackerspace is starting in Beijing. And as a result of getting a bunch of people together, there's going to be a maker fair in Beijing next April.
Oh, my God, really? A maker fair in Beijing?
Yeah, and also this other thing that's really interesting, you know, there's people within government and without know that the education system there is both really good and really awful. It's centuries of people doing nothing but trying to get really good at entrance exams so that they can get into a good university, so that they can go to, you know, a government cush bureaucratic job where they'll do the same thing every day of their life and then die. And that's not really boding well for the future of a society with a vibrant economy. So people really know that they have to foster a culture of creativity in order to have a future. And there are a lot of people, I mean, that's part of why I think all of this is happening over there. It really needs to happen. So, so there's some people who I met who are really high on getting some people involved with hackerspaces and things like that so that people have hands-on experience and not just theory that they can put into practice to do really cool things as the economy and the rest of the world sort of goes down. The game that's been played before of them just copying, you know, creatively and innovatively copying things and doing better. But they need to create that market and that creativity over there to make it all work. So this one person I met is going to get a whole bunch of high school students from around China and got enough money together that he's going to bring them over to play and learn at hackerspaces and collaborate on projects and then show them off. And the idea, hope, is that they'll go home totally high on all this and spread the gospel of how cool it is to actually do things.
Hey, Mitch?
Yeah.
And I know that in certain countries, the hackerspaces won't call themselves hackerspaces because the government won't let them. In China, do they actually call themselves hackerspaces? They use the word hacker?
Yeah, and at universities, they're getting pressure. The heads of the universities are actually getting pressure to start these spaces, which are essentially hackerspaces. And as a result of me getting some people together, many of them are explicitly calling them hackerspaces. So they'll have these state-of-the-art rooms with audio and presentation equipment and all these tests, all this test equipment for people to come together to just do what they love to do, which is pretty amazing.
Now, hey,
Mitch.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Bernie. I'm in Philadelphia.
Hey, Bernie.
Hey, I just had a question. You know, a lot of people in the hacker community probably almost universally find that filtering of content on the internet is anathema to them. What is the from your discussions with people at the hackerspaces in China? How do they feel about the the Great Firewall and people not being able in China to seamlessly access anything on the internet?
Yeah, well,
everything on the internet, rather.
Of course, no one really likes it, but you know, China people really do have to be aware that there are individuals in Chinese government who aren't going to take criticism very well. So hackerspaces over there really are focusing on what positive can come from people getting together, doing what they love to help not only their lives but the people around them and grow local economy. That's really good for the individuals, for the hackerspace, for the community around them, and the government. Anything that helps the economy is going to be good for everybody. There are organizations in China who have not really gotten along with the Chinese government too well, like Fulangong, and you know, a few others that have created websites that, unlike when we were there, me and Bernie and a bunch of people were there in a trip I organized to China a year and a half ago, a hacker trip. And back then, some people in our group set up servers in the U.S. that they can hook into to get HTTP over SSH and stuff like that, so we can get forbidden websites such as Facebook and YouTube and many others. And now, but we have to be a geek to be able to do that, and now these websites that are popping up all over the place, you do not need to be a geek or understand what you're doing to be able to get these up till now forbidden websites into China. So the Chinese government, there are people there who are very intelligent, and they choose their battles. You know, what they do with their intelligence is questionable, but they choose their battles. So as they're seeing that this is a losing one, they're going to focus elsewhere, I think.
Interesting. Thanks.
Now, Mitch, as we know, China's known for having, you know, a government that could, you know, impose its will in certain areas. Now, you were saying that they seem to actually be in favor of hackerspaces, or what exactly do you know anything about, like, the attitude towards this?
Mitch?
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
No, I was cut off after Bernie said
thanks. Oh, this must be the microphone that doesn't work on the phone.
Who was I?
Well, basically, what Dot Ray was asking is if he tells more about the attitude that the Chinese authorities seem to have towards quote-unquote hackers, whether it seems to be more positive than what it is we've been led to believe or what we have in this country.
Yeah, so, you know, it's mixed there, just like it is everywhere else in the world. But when people hear the word hacker, more and more people are wondering which kind of hacker, which is a great leap forward, rather than immediately assume that it's the definition that was promulgated by the mainstream media here in our country, that it's people who do reprehensible illegal things with computers. So, but of all of the scenes that I've been talking about, hacker is nothing but positive. So hacker means people who can encourage, help themselves through doing what they love and help others in doing the same, and therefore giving China an economic future. And that's, you know, it's totally amazing. I mean, there was none of this a year and a half ago. So where that'll lead is just, I don't know, I'm excited about it. But, you know, and as you go around, people are wondering, you know, it's like, hackers are, you know, what kind of hacker? And they're wondering if the people who do these nasty things, right, like the people who broke into Google that started all of the fuss over there, and or if it's people doing, you know, people do know about the worldwide hacker scene over there, because people find information. You know, we're a curious species, and you can't really stop that. And I think that's also part of why individuals in government are finding openings now to, if not help it, at least turn a blind eye to it.
It's interesting. They have an Amazon store there now, Amazon.cn. I don't think yet they have Kindle, so you can't actually get our magazine on the Kindle over there, which would be really kind of cool. But I did look up 2600. This is kind of weird. I looked up 2600 on Amazon.cn, and for some reason it comes linked with the Justin Bieber book. I don't know why that is, but if you type in, if you look at Best of 2600 on Amazon.cn, there's Justin Bieber right below us, and go make of that what you will. Mitch, it's amazing the things that you've been up to, the things that you've been doing globally. Unfortunately, tonight we're in the middle. Well, it's not unfortunate. It's what the magic that makes this place happen. We're in the middle of a fundraiser, but what you've done, you've come up with something that surpasses the things you've done in the past, insofar as one of the projects that you're working on. And I'm referring to one of our favorites, the one known as a TV Be Gone. And what we're doing here tonight, we have a limited number of the best TV Be Gone that's ever been made. I'm not exaggerating by saying that, am I?
No, you are not.
This okay.
The coolest one I've made yet.
Now, imagine this. Everyone, just sit back and imagine this for a moment. That you're in a street, you're in a community, you're in a village very much like your own, maybe it is your own, and you have the ability to turn off anyone's television set within 100 meters. That's a tenth of a kilometer. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. 100 meters, that's an incredible distance. And this new Super TV Be Gone, I'm not sure if that's the exact name of it, but it's pretty super. That is something that we are offering here tonight for a pledge of $125. And we only have 10 of them, but they are the most powerful ones yet. And they will work both in America and overseas. I believe there's a switch on them. Is that right, Mitch?
Yeah, there's a switch, so you can choose one of two databases that'll work anywhere in the world.
Interesting. So basically, the first 10 people that call in for this, 212-209-2950, will get the most powerful TV Beyond ever made, and you will become king of your neighborhood or your gang or whatever it is, because you'll be able to just push a button and within a couple of seconds turn off any TV set that you can basically see across the street or just within line of sight, pretty much. And I guess you also have the power to turn it on, since it's the same signal that turns it on and off. Which is kind of amazing. And the TV Beyond is such a playing field leveler, because let's say you're in an establishment that just has a TV blaring and you want to be able to talk to the people you're with. Well, now you have the ability to just turn the damn thing off. And yeah, they'll turn it back on, but if you keep turning it off, eventually they give up and you have your peace and quiet. All right, we have two calls on the line already. That means there's only 8 left, assuming these people are calling in for them. And let me just add something else, too. What we're also offering tonight, and this is a special bonus for people who are local to the area. This weekend, there is a vintage computer fair going on in Wall, New Jersey. Anybody who wants their name added to the list that calls in tonight will get their name added to the list. It's just an extra special thing that we're offering here tonight. And we'll have some words from one of the organizers of that event coming up a little bit later on in the program. 212-209-2950. Mitch, tell us something about the history of the TV Beyond, when you came up with the idea, the reaction, maybe a story or two as to how it's been used over the years.
Yeah, well, I came up with the idea when I was sitting in a restaurant with some friends. We got together, we hadn't seen each other in a while, and we really wanted to be with each other, and a TV in the corner with the sound off kept distracting us, and of course we eventually started talking about it, and I thought, wouldn't it be cool if you had a device that you could just turn those distractions off? And it hit me in a flash that of course I could, and so I did. And you know, it's interesting that I just made it for me because I loved it, and I had no idea that doing something I love would be something that gave me enough money to keep doing it, you know, making a living on doing what I love. And I think it's great, and I think more people should make time to do what they love and make a living doing what they love, as many of us in this scene do. So, last week I got 2 emails from healthcare providers who told me that they love using TV Beyond because often one of them is an EMT, emergency medical person. They go into a room and the TV's blaring and they can't think. So they said they would they use their TV Beyond just to turn off the TVs wherever they go so that people are calmer, which people are when the TVs are off. Another one was someone who works in a hospital, and she's a nurse, and she just turns off the TV when she enters the room so that people pay attention and are more attentive, and the room's more...
It doesn't turn off other things like pacemakers or anything like that. It just turns off TVs.
Yeah, and pacemakers, fortunately, are not remotely controllable.
Yeah, no one's come up with that brilliant idea yet. We have 3 calls on the line, I believe. I think they're the same 3, which means we would have 7 left. So these things are going pretty fast. Remember, a pledge of $125, you get the most powerful TV Beyond ever made. And Mitch, I know every time you appear someplace, whether it be in Berlin or New York or Beijing or Tokyo, all kinds of adventures are started by somebody turning off a television set and having the proprietor or somebody who wants a TV set on getting all flustered and confused as to why this is happening and how they have no control over the situation. But I think it's a really good thing to be able to use this responsibly. If something is bugging you and it's a place that you're in that you have a right to be in, you should be able to control your environment. And I think for the most part, people get that, although there are occasions where people don't get that. I refer back to an instance in Germany a couple of years ago where I believe there was some consternation at a local mall. You remember that?
Yeah, there was a local mall. It just happened to build itself across the street from where the Chaos Communications Congress was happening. And it was really nice of them to do so because it provided target practice for all the people first learning to solder by making TV Begones in the workshop I was making in the Congress. And so people went across the street, and they had a lot of fun turning off TVs. And they had in there, right at the top of the escalators, you go into the big, huge TV showroom, was the largest TV in the world. That's what they said, anyway.
The largest TV in the world.
The largest TV in the world. It was kind of awesome in its own incredible way. And, of course, that's the first thing you see, so that's the first thing that you practice on. So people would turn it off, and eventually the people who ran the show over at the new mall figured out that there are all these scruffy, weird-looking people coming over, and that correlated with the TVs turning on and off. So they started banning people for 1 year who were caught with one of these devices in their hand. And so that became a badge of honor, and people actually put up a spreadsheet on the wall, on the main door that was across the street from this mall, and people added their names to it as they got banned for a year. And a year is actually perfect because the next year they could go in again.
The next conference is a year for, oh boy, that's beautiful. And that means that that mall has a year-long banning list that they keep track of. I wonder
allegedly.
If they're lesser offenses, you get 6 months, or maybe a lifetime ban is what you should be shooting for. But the fact of the matter is, I think they tried to say that it caused damage to the TV set to turn it off and turn it on again. And, well, it's, you know, it's not a very well-designed TV set if that's exactly, you know, what happens to it when you turn it off. But it's very easy to protect yourself if you're in a situation where you, you know, think these damn kids are going to come and cause all kinds of problems for you. You just cover up the infrared sensor on your TV set, correct?
Well, you have to do it well, however, because if you do it with duct tape or electrical tape, mm-hmm. that turns out to be only translucent to infrared, which is how these remote controls work. So TV Gone Pro will go through electrical tape and duct tape. So if you use aluminum foil and then some tape, that would work.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting because I know, I think, Bernie, you were instrumental in this. When we had the Hope Conference at the Hotel Pennsylvania not too long ago, we actually went around explaining to the people in the hotel lobby, the employees there, how they could protect their television sets because they have a whole wall of them. And we didn't want the entire weekend to be this running battle between the hotel and the hackers of turning TVs off and on. So we told them, all you got to do is cover this up and you'll be protected, right?
Well, it should have gone that way. I was there a few days early because I'm one of the Hope organizers. This was, I guess, about a couple Hopes ago. It was the first year they had all these big flat screen TVs behind the hotel front desk. And I explained to them, hey, this is going to be a problem. You're going to have thousands of hackers descending on this hotel in a couple of days. And I don't want them to disrupt your screens back there, which did show information related to the hotel, too. So I showed them, I demonstrated to them how my TV to be gone on my keychain, turned off their TVs. They were amazed. I said, now listen, you need to put two or three layers of electrical tape over all the infrared windows on these TV sets, or you're going to have a serious problem. And I talked to the main guy behind the desk, and I assured them that this is going to be a problem. Please take care of this. And then a couple days later, when the start conference game started, the security staff started running up to me, our own internal security at Hope, said, oh, the hotel management's really upset. All the TVs at the front desk are going off. And I went down there. They didn't cover any of them up. I said, look, I warned you. Why didn't you do this? Then they covered up them. So sometimes you just can't get people to listen.
You got to listen to hackers. When hackers say something, you got to listen. Most of the time it makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know if they explained this to you, Ed, but the fact is that it's a union hotel, and they had to get the union electrician in order to apply that tape.
Oh, my goodness. All right, listen, I'm not sure how many of these we gave away so far. I think we had about 5 calls come in, and we have open phone lines now. So this may be your only chance to get this amazing brand-new TV Begon that has expanded range, new codes, because new TV sets are always coming out, and they have new codes. It's kind of a battle between some of the electronics manufacturers and I guess, Mitch, as far as figuring out what the code is to turn off various television sets. So this is your chance to get in on the ground floor, I guess, of this brand new model. Remember, 100 meters. I don't know if people can appreciate how far away 100 meters is. But I know one of the older models that is basically probably has less of a range than this one. We were going uptown on the M15, which is a bus, and pressing the button as we were passing various bars on First Avenue. And they were, the TVs were just turning off one after the other. It was like being a god almost. It was the most incredible feeling. And I think one of the improvements in this new model, which has not yet come out, it's not yet available anywhere. One of the improvements is battery life. Is that right, Mitch?
Yeah. So this one has a really large battery inside that's rechargeable, and it comes with a recharger. And it comes with, you know, they're not released yet, like you said. I'm still working on, I have a bunch of prototypes, and they work perfectly, and these are ones that will be mass-produced, and those are the ones that are going to go to you folks who pledge 125 or more to this incredible radio show on this incredible community radio station.
212-209-2950. We still have open lines, and I think we only have five of these left. Budget 125, you get the brand new TV Big On with a range of 100 meters. And what's really cool, and we always had a problem with this in the past, you don't need a different version overseas from here in the United States anymore. You just need to throw the switch. And I guess when you charge a thing, you need the converter for the AC. But that's
yeah, actually not even a converter, just a converter plug, because the recharger works anywhere for any voltage anywhere in the world.
Right.
And I have two different styles of plugs, one for the European Type C and one for the regular American Type A.
Okay, I see two calls on the line, 212-209-2950. So we might only have three of these left. So if you want to take advantage of this, now is the time to call. We might not have this in the next 5 minutes if you don't give a call now. You want me to take Visa, MasterCard, all those credit card things? Keep in mind, though, the reason why we're doing this, the reason why Mitch has been generous enough to donate this and so many other things over the years, is because WBAI is a treasure. It's one of these places that exists despite the odds, has existed since the year 1960. And hopefully with your help, we'll continue to exist. We can talk about things like this. We can talk about ways to subvert technology, to take control of technology, to battle various corporations and laws and governments and things like that. And also to innovate, to invent new things, to expand our minds, to be creative. If you look around on the commercial band, you're not going to find any of that. Really, you're not going to find any of that because it doesn't sell products. And that's really what every broadcast medium is about, selling products. And we're not about that. You're the investors in this radio station. You're the sponsors. You're the people that make it possible. And see how different it is when it's up to people instead of companies that are simply trying to sell you things. You wind up with conversations. I mean, this is not the kind of radio station that you have on in the background in a supermarket. Why? Well, because people tend to listen to what we're saying, not simply have us on so that it can sound pleasant in an elevator or something like that. I mean, we sound pleasant in an elevator. I know we sound pleasant in taxicabs. We're being broadcast right now in a lot of them. But the fact is, when you're in a taxi cab, you kind of want to listen to what's being said on the radio. Sometimes people don't even get out of the taxi when they arrive at their destination because they're listening to our show. And this has been a problem, actually. So people wind up paying a lot more in fares, but it's worth it. But instead of doing that, why don't you give us a call, pledge $125, and hopefully there are TV Begons left, 212-209-2950. 125 gets you the most powerful one yet, the most versatile one yet. And you'll be supporting the radio station and doing a really good thing. You'll feel great doing that. 212-209-2950. Anything you want to add? Go ahead, Bernie.
And, again, anybody who pledges in right now at 212-209-2950 will get a free admission ticket to the Vintage Computer Festival this weekend in Wall, New Jersey, which I have attended several times. It's an awesome hacker event with people bringing computers from the 1970s, earlier than that, from the 60s, 70s, maybe early 80s. It's a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about it a little bit on the show soon, but if you pledge now, 212-209-2950, as a gift for supporting the station, you'll get not only the most modern and high-power TV Be Gone, but free admission to the Vintage Computer Festival.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Say number. 092950.
All right. And for those of you who are in different parts of the country or the world who say that, well, I'm nowhere near New Jersey, I can't possibly make it there this weekend, that's fine. But you know what? You can give this to anybody you want. Your name will simply be put on a list, And that name will be able to get into that conference this weekend. And if you know somebody else, just give them that information, and they'll be able to get in as a present from you. Just one thing we're offering, one thing that the good folks at the Vintage Computer Fair have offered to us. We'll be talking to one of them in a little bit. 212-209-2950. What I'd like to do now, since I'm not sure if we've given away all of the TV Begons yet, we're going to find out. I want to move into something else. We're offering other things right now. Greg, I think you'll remember this as part of the Hope Conference. We are offering, and this was very successful last time we offered it, so we're offering it again. We are offering a best of DVD compilation from the last three Hopes. Now, those last three Hopes, the most recent one was called The Next Hope. The one before that was called The Last Hope. And the one before that was called Hope Number 6. And we have two different packages. We have a package of 20 DVDs for a pledge of $75. And we have a package of 40 DVDs for $125. And what you'll get in both of those packages is really some of the most well-received talks of those three conferences. And we're talking three different conferences here, not just one, three. One is enough. one certainly, you'll have a lot of quality material here. But with these three, you're going to get all kinds of amazing speakers, and you'll learn a ton. What I want to do now is play an excerpt from one of the conferences. And this is by far one of the more popular talks that we offer. This is Steve Rombaum, who's a private investigator who's spoken at just about all the conferences that we've ever had. And what's particularly good about this is this particular talk, it counts as one of the DVDs in either the 20 DVD set or the 40 DVD set. It counts as one talk, but it's actually 3 hours long. So you get a couple of DVDs, but you're going to get either 19 more talks or 39 more talks, depending on which package you get. 212-209-2950. Again, $75, you get a package of 20 DVDs from the last three conferences. For $125, you'll get a package of 40 DVDs from the last three conferences. So what I'd like to do now is just play an excerpt from the most recent talk that Steve gave at the Next Hope back in 2010, where he's talking about some things that I think would be very much of interest to our listeners as far as privacy, how your privacy is being threatened, and how maybe you can protect yourself.
Yeah, I should set up Steve also, because his bio I think you can still find on the Hope websites. But he's a professional private investigator, and he's a very serious guy. He's very much a technology-oriented person, yeah. But he's a professional private investigator, so he does this stuff for a living.
He's been featured on CBS News, 60 Minutes, 48 Hours. He's been in The New Yorker. This guy is the real thing.
Very he's serious,
the real McCoy, and we're honored to have him at the conference, speaking on these issues, which he knows so much about, and demonstrating right there on stage.
The demos are amazing, because what he does is he'll call on people and he'll he'll get names of the people in the audience or people that they designate, and he'll find stuff about them. That some of it, of course, is through for fee, pay type of services that maybe only private investigators can get legitimate access to.
What he talks about here is material that anybody has access to, that is open source, available on the internet, and it's shocking. It's shocking how much information about us is out there. So let's play a little bit of this. Again, the number 212-209-2950. We may still have some TV Begons left for $125. But we also are offering the Hope Greatest Hits 20 DVD package for $75. We're offering the 40 DVD package for $125. And everybody who calls and pledges any amount will get a free admission to the Vintage Computer Fair this weekend in Wall, New Jersey. More details on that coming up. 212-209-2950. Let's listen to Steve.
With any starting point, it is possible to build a complete dossier on someone. Doesn't matter what it is, a social security number, a MAC address, an email address, a license plate. From that information, it's possible to discover everything about someone. Sometimes you can only link one piece of information to another. Sometimes you can grab things wholesale. Before we continue, I'd like to emphasize one thing. Everything that we're going to be discussing today is open source or semi-open source. By semi-open source, I mean available to investigators, available to security professionals, probably available to half or more of the people in this room. We're not going to discuss FinCEN. We're not going to discuss NCIC. We're not going to discuss any governmental databases or anything that is by definition exclusive or closed. We are going to discuss what is available easily and quickly on everyone in this room. Primarily, we're going to be discussing the information that you yourself contribute. The vast majority of the information that's available out there today is information that you gave up, either knowingly or unknowingly. You surrendered that information, your name, your address, your phone number, your date of birth, your social security number, your photo, which once upon a time was the holy grail of investigation. When I started out as an investigator, I would be paid $500 or $1,000 to get somebody's photo so he could be ID'd. Today, all you need is to Google somebody. Information like sexual orientation, politics, finances, activities, business relationships, friends, family, all of that is open source these days. When I started out almost 25 years ago, this was confidential information that you had to hire an investigator for. This is how it used to work. And a lot of what we're going to be discussing today is going to be how much things have changed. Not just how much things have changed since I first started speaking at Hope, but how much they've changed in the past few years. As an investigator, for example, somebody would give me a telephone number. From that telephone number, I would get the name and address. Everybody here knows how to pull a CNA. From there, I'd get date of birth and social security number. From there, addresses, family, place of employment, businesses, real property, marriages, divorces, everything that's public records, criminal records, civil records, other semi-public records or public records, driver's licenses, motor vehicles, and so on and so on. All of that starting out with one piece of information. Maybe not a telephone number, but an email address, a name and a date of birth. That's how it used to be. You would take an end of a string, you'd start pulling, and by the time you were done, you would have a complete dossier on someone. And by the way, I mean, there's much, much more. I ran out of space on the page. Today, not necessary. Today, you start with a telephone number, you plug in a telephone number, and you immediately get a comprehensive report or a combo report or whatever it's called on the system that you're using. I plug in your phone number, and I immediately have your name, address, social security number, date of birth, driver's license, motor vehicles, family, residence history, employment history, and so on and so on. It's no longer necessary to do it piecemeal. Everything is cross-referenced. Everything is available in one glob. Let's talk about what's changed in the past few years. Now, this says what's changed in the past 10 years. Frankly, let's talk about what's changed since the last Hope. First of all, computing power and speed. When I started out, I had a Mac with a 128K floppy disk. I had to put in the program, pop it out, save the data, put in the program, pop it out. I mean, now you have 4 processors, 8, you know, quad core, whatever. Speed is unbelievable. Storage is unbelievable. I routinely buy more RAM than I had in a hard drive. You know, I'm glad to see that people in the front few rows are approximately my age. Sometimes I talk about this to trainees, people in their early 20s who are becoming detectives, becoming federal agents. And a lot of this is like talking about the Stone Age. Storage power, processing power, exponential increases. Department of Homeland Security, who I understand dropped by yesterday, they save 75 years now of entry and exit in the U.S. They will never throw anything away ever again. Everything is now digital from the get-go. Everything is now digital from the point of inception. Your medical record, keyed in at the nurse's desk. Your travel, it's not a paper handwritten ticket anymore. Your credit card records, immediately. I can do a charge over the phone log on to my Visa account and see the charge within 30 seconds. Everything is immediately digital, and it goes into the databases just as quickly. No keying time, more important, because this is all about money, as you're going to see. No keying costs. Your information is digital from point zero, and it's in the databases immediately. Let's talk about old stuff. OCR sucks in everything. Google Books, newspapers, documents from 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 100 years ago are fed into high-speed sheet reading scanners. An entire book can be done in an hour, and pretty accurately. Cell phones. We're going to talk a lot about cell phones today. Cell phones are one of the three big game changers we're going to talk about. Everybody here carries a cell phone. Everybody here, without me checking, carries a smartphone. Very few people don't. Because you carry these items and you use these items and you never turn them off, or you can't turn them off, I know everything there is to know about you. And we're going to cover this in great detail. Cell phones are a huge game changer. Routine cross-referencing, name translation, similars, artificial intelligence scripts. It's not just, here's an address history database, here's a telephone history database, here's a purchasing history database. Immediately, these things are cross-referenced and linked by every possible link. I can put in your phone number and have your credit card charges for the next month, for the last month, rather. I can put in your phone number, next month would be cooler, I know. I can put in your telephone number, and from your telephone number, have all of your email addresses. And that's unheard of. That was unheard of a year ago. I can put in your email address and have your name, your address, your telephone number, and all of that. Now, by the way, just let me digress and say one thing. Last year, after the talk, we hung out in the room and spoke, and unfortunately screwed the following speaker. He got about 5 minutes instead of 1 hour. We are going to finish on time today, I hope. But more important than that, Emmanuel and the crew have given us a table. We are going to leave here, go to a table. One of the things that we're going to do, other than answer any follow-up questions that we didn't have time for during the Q&A, is I'm going to let anybody who wants to come over and play with all of our investigative databases. Not just the stuff... Oh, yeah. Listen, as I'm going to be discussing in great detail over the next couple hours, I'm a great believer in openness. I'm a great believer in PI FOIA. There is nothing that I do that I'm ashamed of. I think that I make the world a better place, a more just place. I know these folks here do. It's not like you see on TV, peeping in keyholes and all of that. And I want you guys to know and understand what we do. As far as cross-referencing and mashups and all of that, let me give you one ridiculous example. I call this CompStat for drunks. There's something in DC called Stumble Safely. A guy took the entire past couple of years of crime reports, and he took the list of all the bars in the downtown area of DC, and he just put them together. Took him about one evening of programming, and he put up a thing called Stumble Safely. You can check a bar and see how many muggings in the area, how many robberies, how many assaults, how many shootings. You can determine, is that a safe place to get drunk? Now, for me, this is a hilarious thing. You can check it out, stumblesafely.com. This sort of thing, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, would have required a skilled programmer, would have required massive outlays for data. A trained monkey can do this now. And I know, because some of them work for me. No, no, just kidding. What else has changed? GPS and the ability to track you. Listen, your cell phone is glued to your ass 24/7. Because your cell phone is with you, I know where you are. And we're going to go into that in great detail. GPS, Skyhook, people going around, Google Skyhook going around and mapping every Wi-Fi node in North America, every single node. Creation of new searching and new indexing, including translation, including voice to text, including video to text, which I'm going to show you, which I find spooky. And last, but by no means not least, one of the other game changers we're going to talk about, intelligent cameras with onboard analytics, onboard facial recognition, attached to massive high-speed databases. Now, I know that earlier today there were, or over the past 24 hours, there have been talks here saying, yeah, you can hide from facial recognition databases, and you can opt out, and you can do this, and you... No, you can't. No, you can't. You can't, period. I'm going to show you. I have great respect for the speaker that was talking earlier today about facial recognition and how you can dodge the governmental databases and the DL databases. You can't. You absolutely can't. I'm an investigator. I've been doing this for 25 years. I do a lot of work with law enforcement. These guys are former law enforcement and special agents and state cops, and they're PIs forever. You can ask us all about it. You can't. Another thing is ridiculously accurate precision target marketing. The name of the game here, guys, is not that there's people out there that are big brother that want to invade your privacy. They want to sell you stuff. This is all about money. It's not nefarious. It's not sinister. This is all an attempted engine of capitalism. That's it. They want to sell you stuff. They want to know everything about you so they can sell you stuff. And it results in you each getting a digital proctology exam. There's no escape from it. But it's not a sinister motive. They want to sell you stuff. They want to own your eyeballs. We're going to talk about augmented reality. We're going to talk about it a little bit with actual augmented reality, but we're going to talk about other things like Google goggles. I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. We're going to talk about that. Everybody wants to know what your cell phone sees. So they're encouraging you to use it for things like barcode scanning, visual recognition of things like paintings, and augmented reality. They want to know that you're in New York and you're at the Empire State Building, not just from OCR and not just from your purchases and not just from you buying a ticket through your cell phone, but because you've taken a photo of a building and you've used augmented reality to ID that building. And again, it's all about money. Data storage costs. Somebody sent this to me about 2 months ago. This is a no-lie ad. I don't know if you can see this. $3,400 for a 10-meg drive. This is in my lifetime, folks. I can go down to the lowest form of life, a Staples tech salesman. And I can say, give me your biggest disk. And for $160, I can walk out of there with a 2 terabyte disk. I can tell you, when I started as an investigator, there wasn't 2 terabytes of investigative data in the country. That's a fact. This was the reality, not just when I started, but well into my career. The main thing that's changed, one of the main things that's changed, there's no erasing, there's no deleting, there's no forgetting. Everything you've ever done, every stupid photo, every ranting, troll-like blog post, every drunken text message, everything is saved forever. Forever. It's saved, and it's not just saved, it's indexed, and it's cross-referenced, and it's tied to your name forever. You don't believe it? Come by the table later, and I'll show you.
Wow. Okay, that's an excerpt from the Next Hope, a conference we had last year. Steve Rombaum, private investigator, giving just a guideline of the things that his 3-hour talk is going to cover in great detail. And I'll tell you, Greg, I was just blown away by the thoroughness of it all, how so much of our lives are just being saved and documented and cross-referenced. And I got to say, you know, it's Steve has one perspective on this, where it's just for sales is not that nefarious. I think it can be nefarious if it's not already.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so you know, the sales, absolutely, you know, there's no doubt that if AT&T could make more money, you know, getting you to sell ads, mm-hmm. you know, essentially be targeted by ads, they would do that instead of paying $90 for your iPhone subscription.
Also, the things that governments can do with this information, or just evil people in general.
I'll tell you, the dollar figures are even better. You look at Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, these companies that are doing the massive data analytics, mm-hmm. the data processing collection, your IBMs, places like that. It's actually, there's bigger money probably on that side.
This is just one talk that we're offering in the package tonight. This is a 3-hour talk, and there are 19 others that you can get for a $75 pledge, and they are all riveting. They are all amazing talks from the most recent Hackers on Planet Earth conferences that took place in 2010, 2008, and 2006. For a pledge of $125, you'll get 40 of the best talks from those three conferences. But you got to give a call now, 212-209-2950. We're over the 1,000 mark, which I'm thrilled about. And we're on for 2 hours tonight, but we need to double that number at the very least in order to get to where we need to be. 212-209-2950. I think this talk in and of itself is worthy of people calling in. But when you consider that you get 19 others for the $75 level and you get 39 others for the $125 level, it's the deal of the week, I think, almost any place. 212-209-2950. We have open phone lines. And Bernie, I know that you know how to fix that, right?
Well, I hope so. I was just going to say, I wish we could have listened to all 3 hours of Steve Rambam on this show tonight, but we have limited airtime, although we are on for 2 hours tonight. But I just want to remind our listeners that Steve went on during that next 3 hours of his talk to demonstrate how you can easily do this stuff that he was describing. He goes into, great detail, and you can watch this on a DVD. It's a tutorial how to do this stuff, but that's not all. There's dozens of examples of this kind of information on this DVD set that you can call, and that's just what you're giving to everyone calling as a gift for supporting this radio station, which is the only station in New York, or really in the country, that really talks about these issues at length and how you can find out what's being done with your personal information, how you can protect yourself from it best you can, and how to take advantage of what this technology offers. 212-209-2950. Call and pledge any level of support to this radio station, WBAI. You're not going to hear it anywhere else. We know you like listening to this show, that it has great value to you, or you wouldn't be listening to us right now.
Join the three callers on the line. Good job, Bernie. Got three calls in, 212-209-2950. And remember, what we're playing here, it's audio. You don't see the video on the radio, but you do see the video when you get the DVDs.
Great information. 212-209-2950. Support this radio station that brings you this kind of information, because you're not going to get it at any other radio station you listen to, frankly.
We've had some really popular return speakers over the years at the HOPE conferences, and I'm sure some of those are represented. The popular folks come back. I'm always impressed, yes, also, though, by the first timers, because often you have people that have spent certainly weeks, maybe months, maybe years putting mm-hmm. together content, and they just come and share it. They give away their knowledge.
That's what we try to do with the conferences. We try to blend it, people who are brand new, kids, people who have never talked before an audience before, and those polished people who do this professionally, who go around the world talking to audiences, and some of them, you know, quite distinguished audiences, but they always want to talk to the hackers as well, and they're always out there being very open and honest with their assessment of technology and how people can get control of it. And that's the magic of it. And I think it's encompassed in Steve's talks. And I'll tell you this, those of you who are fans of this kind of thing, if you pledge for the 125 level, the 40 DVDs, you'll get every single one of Steve's talks at the last three conferences, including the one where he was arrested in 2006. That's a big story in and of itself. 212-209-2950. Considering that his talks generally go for 3 hours, that's a great deal right there. You're getting a lot of video. We say 40 talks, but you're getting a lot more than 40 hours. You're getting a lot more than that. 212-209-2950. Again, pledge for $75 for the 20 DVD set, $125 for the 40 DVD set. 212-209-2950. We have... Oh, six calls on the line, and Voltaire, I think they're going to need your help back down there. You came over here. Things are pretty hectic down there, aren't they, in the tally room? All right, well, I guess you should run down the hall then. Don't hurt anybody. This is good. When we have to send people down the hall, that's always a good thing.
We have operators. Operators are standing by to take your call.
Operators are running down the hall to take your call.
And they are able to take it at the different levels and keep track of the premiums and also sign you up for the vintage computer.
That's right. And that's another thing. Everybody who calls in, pledges any amount, gets a free ticket. Their name will be on the list to the Vintage Computer Festival.
Festival.
I keep saying it wrong. I keep saying fair and festival. I had the same problem with the Trenton computer, whichever one that was. But this one is in Wall, New Jersey. In just a moment, we're going to be speaking to one of the organizers there. And again, if you're not in the area, you can certainly give your name to somebody else, and they can show up and have fun and learn things about computers as well. That's just an extra thing we're throwing in just to sweeten the pot a bit. But the real reason to call is to support the radio station, keep us going so we can have programs like this for many years. And, you know, I got to say, there probably wouldn't be Hope Conferences were it not for the amazing response that we get from people by being on the radio. That sort of serves as a barometer. Well, this kind of thing is receptive. This is something that audiences are interested in. And it's just a great way of reaching out to people throughout the world. And that's the magic of radio, which you're investing in by calling 212-209-2950, pledging whatever you can, getting the DVD packages, either 20 or 40, and just supporting one of the best radio stations around.
It's an opportunity to sort of vote with your pocketbook or vote with your wallet and show the support for what you do like. And we see this also with the hacker conferences, as a matter of fact. And I'm just always amazed at that. We see people like Rambam and many other people up on the stage, and they're incredible experts, as we were just saying, but they're also usually very modest. They say, well, I don't know everything, and I really respect the audience. I'm here to help to you, but I'm also here to learn from you. And the thing that's always amazing to me is that it's open. These conferences are open to people with ideas, and in this sort of meritocracy-driven attitude that we have, every year there are new people that we haven't heard of, that are stepping up and presenting their own interests, their own findings to the group. So that's another way of getting involved. And we're not even talking about the magazine. I mean, people send articles in as well, the same thing. I'm just always so impressed by the incredible skill level we have at these events.
I got to tell you something. Since the magazine has gone online, meaning available on various devices like Kindle and Nook, we've received so many more people interested in being a part of it. We've received a lot more article submissions. And it just, I think it shows that when technology changes, you need to dive right in and be a part of it and start shaping it yourself and not be afraid. And this is something that I think the big companies don't get yet. And because they don't listen. They don't come to the hacker conferences and hear what people are saying and be a part of the innovation. It's a magical time for so many people, and you can really become a part of that magic by looking at these DVDs. 20 DVDs for a pledge of $75, 40 for a pledge of $125. And actually, you know what? That's not entirely correct, because you're getting more than 20. You're getting more than 40. You're getting 20 talks and 40 talks, respectively, but some talks are more than one DVD. So you're getting a lot of material. And it's what we consider to be the most popular, the most educational. Join the five callers on the line, 212-209-2950. Show your support to WBAI and be a part of the magic. And also, those of you who pledge will get your name on the list for the Vintage Computer Festival. Now, we also have joining us on the line right now, Bill Degnan, I believe is how you pronounce this name, right? From the Vintage Computer Festival. Bill, are you with us?
Yes, I am. That is correct, Bill Degnan.
Great. Now, tell us something about this computer festival. I understand that this has been going on for how many years?
Well, this is the seventh one, but it's actually been going on the West Coast even before that, in the late 90s. So this is the seventh East Coast fair, but there have been fairs in Munich and England and then out in California, and then, of course, in Wall, New Jersey.
Wall, New Jersey.
East is, and it was in Boston, I think, a few times.
Uh-huh. That's amazing. Now, what kinds of things can people expect to see?
Well, we've got a number of very exciting things. We have 23 exhibitors who are going to be bringing their carefully crafted and hacked vintage computers to display for the public to see, and they'll be in action where you can sit down and actually, in most cases, use them. There'll be everything from Apple I replicas, Commodore 64s. We're going to be rebuilding an IBM 1130 system or computer printer and whatnot, and we've got PDP-8. It goes on and on.
Wow, that's incredible.
And that's just one thing. There's also, you've got speakers, and we've got workshops where you can actually sit down and work on computers or transistors and so forth.
Now, of course, you guys also show up at the HOPE conferences, and I think you get quite a good response from the people there, right?
Right. Yes, we've been doing exhibits for the past, I think, three HOPE conferences.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's something. I've met so many hackers who they're into the newest thing, they're into all the innovation, but they're also into the history, into the old computers, into seeing how things work, how things were put together once. I don't know if you heard in the most recent talk, but Steve Rombaugh made reference to a 10-megabyte hard drive going for, I think, $3,400. Things like this fascinate people, being able to look at these huge devices that were brand new back then and the cutting edge of technology, and just seeing how far we've come. But in a sense, we've also we've lost some of the magic, because I remember those days when big hard drives were considered 10 megs, and it really seemed like some kind of alien device that no one had ever used before. And I think maybe now we sort of take things for granted.
Well, I think that's very true. I mean, I am a, I work in a modern computer world during the day. And at night and in my spare time, I like to work on the old computers because you can get your hands on them in the same way that you can get your hands on an old car. Working on an old Volkswagen engine is something that you can actually, turn the wrench and actually make adjustments, whereas with a modern car, there's not a lot you can do with it. You just have to take it into the shop and let them plug it into a computer.
You know, Bill, don't even get me started on today's cars. I have a smart car, which is not so smart, and every time something goes wrong with it, I can only take it to one place in Canada. Right now, I have a problem with the remote control on the key, and the only people who can sync it again to the car are in Canada, so I really have to travel hundreds of miles just to fix something relatively minor. So, yeah, that's totally true what has happened with today's technology.
Right, and it's fun. It's fun to work on computers where you can actually get in there and solder on the board and fix things or make adjustments because you can see the circuit board a little bit better. There's not as much microcircuitry and surface mount part, so you can actually replace a voltage regulator or upgrade a crystal and get some faster communications because you can, with a magnifying glass at the most, see what you're actually working on.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
Hey, Bill, it's Bernie. Yes, I just wanted to say that the several years I've attended to the Vintage Computer Festival in Wall, New Jersey, by the way, you have a website. I think it's vintage.org. Is that right?
That's correct. Vintage.org. Click on the links, and it'll take you to the complete details of the Vintage Computer Festival.
The displays that people bring, the exhibitors, this is really first-class, museum-quality displays people put together. I mean, whole booths with you can tell these were labors of love. People obviously spend months putting together these really detailed displays just for you to benefit and see how these vintage computers worked. And some of them are decades old. What I find interesting is that a lot of these computers are considerably older than a lot of the attendees. But that's not a problem. Young people want to come and sit down at these old computers.
Bernie, a lot of them are bigger than some of the attendees, too.
Oh, that much bigger. Well, I don't know. Some of the attendees are pretty big, too. But, Bill, didn't you say you're going to set up a teletype workshop? People can use the much-loved ASR-33 teletype machine, and won't actually one be given away at the festival this year?
That is very true. We're going to be giving away a hand-picked serviceable, what we're calling serviceable teletype, and we're going to actually take the thing apart right then and there in the workshop and go through piece by piece and try to hook it up to a computer and get the thing running as a demonstration to everyone that attends at the workshop so that they can go home and then they can work on their own teletypes that they've either purchased or won. We're giving one away as a prize. And It's a great way to get in there. There's going to be some real experts there who can help answer almost any question about teletypes and how to hook them up to a computer.
All right, we just want to remind people at this point that everybody who calls in tonight will have their name added to the guest list at the Vintage Computer Festival in Wall, New Jersey this weekend. And it's something that we encourage people who might be hearing this show later on, go on down and attend and learn something about computers. It's great fun for the whole family, learn something about history. It just never stops being fascinating. It's like anything else. Bill brought up cars. Cars is one example. Cameras, another example. When Kyle and I travel in various parts of the world, he has an old camera, and kids just flock around because they see this old camera that, of course, you can't see the picture after you take it because it's film, but they're fascinated by the mechanics, by the fact that it's something old, something that still works, something that probably is still a lot better than things that are operating today, many things that are operating today. So I think it's that magic of the oldness of technology and how it underlines what we do today.
And there's also that style that some computers really had a style to them. There was weird colors. Sometimes they were orange. Sometimes they were blue. They had metal cases and all these strange shapes and weird things printed on them. There was definitely a uniqueness and artisticness to some of these early computers, you know, as well as cameras and cars and, you know, anything else. And now we have just three or four different models of brands of cars you can buy and, you know, three or four different types of computers. But there was a time when there were so many different operating systems and there were so many different disk storage formats, whether it was teletypes or cassette or 5 1/4-inch disks or 3 1/2-inch disks or 3-inch disks or 8-inch disks. And you had all these different kind of competing models of computer. And what a lot of attendees to the Vintage Computer Festival find is they'll walk around the corner and they'll see that computer that brings back all those memories of when they had their first job or when they were in high school or elementary school, and it reminds them of the first computer and their first computer experience. And it really brings back a lot of pleasant memories for most people, except for perhaps people who got fired from their original jobs. But
yes,
it really, that's something that whenever a person visits an exhibit like these, they tend to want to tell you their story. There's always a story behind a computer. It's not just a thing, but it's the thing that I wrote my paper on, or it's the computer that I played my first games on. I learned how to play Pac-Man on it, or whatever. And there's always a human touch to the computers that you don't necessarily feel today.
Well, Bill, I wish we could talk about this for longer. We have to do an entire show based on vintage computers because it's such a fascinating topic and one that's very dear to my heart. And I want to thank you for the generosity of offering the tickets, but please give out the details for people who might be tuning in late as to just where and when this is and the website.
Okay. Well, first of all, you want to go to vintage.org, vintage.org, and click on the link to the Vintage Computer Festival East 7.0. It's at the InfoAge Science Center, which is in Wall Township, New Jersey. The event itself is Saturday, May 14th and Sunday, May 15th at the InfoAge Science Center, and it's sponsored by the Mid-Atlantic Retro Computing Hobbyist Association and Vintage Tech. Doors open at 10 each day. Speakers, which we didn't really talk about, there's some great speakers, some real important people in the history of computing that will be speaking, that begin at 10:15 in the morning and end at 2, and then the exhibits in the marketplace, we have consignees with vintage computers where you can actually purchase them, will be open at 2 o'clock p.m., and then the Vintage Computer Festival itself runs until 7 p.m. Saturday and 5 p.m. on Sunday. So it's a whole weekend of vintage computing.
All right, Bill Degnan, thanks so much for being part of the show tonight, and best of luck with the conference. Hope to make it down there myself. And we'll see you at Future Hopes as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. We are going to move on to some more material. But first, let me just point out that the Personal Computer Show is not on tonight. They've been preempted tonight. They will have a two-hour show next week, though. So tune in for them as well. This is Off the Hook. We'll be going for another hour, or another 50 minutes, actually. We're at 1740, and that's great. We're almost at the 2000 level. And, of course, you know, we like to break 2600 at some point during our two-hour shows. Our phone number, 212-209-2950. Everybody who calls and pledges any amount gets a ticket to the Vintage Computer Festival that we just talked about that will be happening in Wall, New Jersey this weekend. We'll be back in just a moment with the next part of our program. Stay tuned.
Living in a city of immigrants, I don't need to go traveling. Touch.